And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Jurassic Pod. I am Eric Corrine of theathletic.com/any number of things. Joining me to talk about the tide for fifth place, but not really, but definitely in sixth place, Toronto Raptors, the one, the only, Holly McKenzie. How are you, Holly?
Hi. I wish that my webcam worked right now, because I don't know why, but as you said that, I got like a burst of energy and I was doing the airplane, like with my arms, as you were like, coming to you live, because the Raptors are in sole possession of sixth place. Wow.
Yeah. They are, you know, after I said that they would not catch Cleveland with 18 games to go, Jared Allen got hurt. The Cavs went in a bit of a tailspin, although they did rebound to beat Orlando on Monday night without a bunch of their players and a bunch more. Evan Mobley got injured. I think Lauri Markkanen got injured as well. Hopefully, I mean, that team has been really snake bitten. And it's sort of, I mean, from an objective point of view, it sort of sucks that they're, again, probably, but not for sure, going to the play-in, but lots of games to go. But this is not a Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. If you'd like to read about the Cleveland Cavaliers, Kelsey Russo has got you covered at The Athletic.
Subscribe to The Athletic. But again,
I'm Eric Corrine, and I cover the Raptors, and Holly McKenzie occasionally watches the Raptors when she's not watching the Fire NCAA women's tournament. Do you want to, let's just start there before we get to the Raptors. Give me 60 seconds on Paige Buchers.
Goodness. So last night was a double overtime game between UConn and North Carolina State. Crazy. Just one of those games that when you're watching it, you're like, it's not fair that either of these teams has to not advance. Like, they both played so well. They're both just great teams, like the full team. Awesome game, back and forth, incredible basketball, officiating, you know.
well, we'll get to that.
Get to that, because it was all over the place last night in different leagues and levels of basketball. But yeah, Paige had, so I was watching the Raptors, obviously, but I kind of had like my eye just like during commercials. But then once the game like got down to like the final 2 minutes of the fourth, obviously I was watching NCAA, because I'm sorry, like, it just, you know, had to do
it's,
it.
It's amazing.
And then like, it went into overtime.
Mean, single elimination tournaments, that might be their last, that might be a lot of players' last games with their teams in this case. Like, that's, you know, high drama.
It was incredible. Paige, in the first 6 minutes of overtime, so the first 5 minutes of the first overtime and the first minute of the second overtime, she hadn't missed a shot, and I think she had 17 points. Like, she was insane. Like, she wanted every shot. Every shot she took, there was zero hesitation. She was just drilling everything. Man, she's incredible. And Holly Rowe was telling a story about, like, talking to the UConn coach. And Gino was saying, like, had told her, like, a number of years ago, like, we have the next Diana Taurasi. Like, she's coming up. And Holly was like, I'm really, you know, I really wanted to see who it was. And then this little high school Paige comes into the gym. And she's, like, this scrawny little girl, because she's still pretty small, and she's like, I looked at her and thought, this is the next Diana Taurasi, like, how? And you watch her play and you're like, holy, she is that girl. Like, she is incredible. It was she was awesome. I felt really bad that either team had to lose, but Paige was incredible. Aliyah Edwards, Canadian, played great for UConn. A huge offensive rebound and put back in the overtime. And yeah, it was just great. I love the tournament. I know that a lot of NBA fans say they really don't like college basketball. Whatever, like, just let yourself have fun. Enjoy it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, Paige could not be rebuked.
I knew that I could tell from your face there was something you were going to say. And I was like, what does he have to add? But because I was watching that, when I flipped over to the Raptors, I couldn't believe that Pascal had 40 points.
Yeah. Wow. Great game last night. I mean, and I'm sure Raptors fans would have preferred it were a less great game, and they took care of business playing the Boston Celtics without Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who were both given were kind of banged up night off, and I guess didn't have to clear customs, which is cool. Al Horford remained away for personal reasons. The real blow to them is Robert Williams, which sucks. He will need some sort of surgery on torn meniscus in his left knee. He's obviously a huge part of what is the league's best defense. And if you look at the last, 30 games or so, the best defense, and it's not even close. And you probably expected things to go easier last night, or Monday night, I should say. But as we know with these Raptors, do not assume, or you know how that saying goes. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the details, let's zoom out. The Raptors are, let's see here, 43-32. I believe that is a season high, 11 games over 500, tied with the Bulls for fifth place without the tiebreaker. So essentially a game behind the Bulls. And a game ahead of the Cavs, who, as I mentioned, beat Orlando on Monday night. Quickly, we will in terms of the remaining schedule, Chicago has, believe it or not, the most difficult schedule remaining in the Eastern Conference, third overall in the league. They've got the Heat. This is not in order. They've got the Heat, Bucks, Celtics, Wolves, Charlotte, Washington, and Clippers. There's not a gimme in there for sure, although as we know with the Raptors, there's no such thing as a gimme. Raptors are 25th easiest schedule. Miami, Philly, Minnesota, Atlanta, Houston, Orlando, and the nine Knicks. Cleveland is right in between them with Milwaukee, Philly, Dallas, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Orlando, New York. Most of the projections have the Raptors finishing where they currently stand in at least they did before Monday night when Chicago lost in New York, which might flip some things. So anyway, the odds say the Raptors are going to finish fifth or sixth, but hell, there's seven games still to go. Things are too close to call. And as we learned last night, we don't know when teams who do have something to play for are actually going to play for said thing. And then if they do or don't, we don't know if it will matter, because the Celtics did a very Celtics-y thing, and in other times, a very Raptors-y thing, and annoyed the hell out of, more, I don't want to say more talented, but, more seasoned, certainly more top-heavy team, and certainly at various points, and we can gloss over the officiating, which was not good, but they would have been full value for that win had they pulled it off. So what was your reaction to the part of that game that you did see?
Oh my God, they're annoying. The Celtics, when they're playing pretty much anyone else, I'm just like, their defense is incredible. They have so many fun players. What an awesome team to watch. When they play the Raptors, I don't know why. They just make me so angry. I feel like constantly players are on the floor. Thad was like thrown out of bounds a couple times last night. No calls. Not even a question of whether they were going to look at that. Like, just... Ugh. Also, if Marcus Smart had to pick one team to make a highlight reel of, like him playing against, it would have to be the Raptors, right? My God, that guy loves playing Toronto.
I mean, just on flops alone, sure.
He looks incredible. I mean, he's really a great player.
I just found out I have a award votes, I'm seriously going to consider him for Defensive Player of the Year. But like, you can see. A, he's been like a really good connecting point guard, which they have badly needed for a long time. And it turns out they had it on their roster all along. and secondly, when those guys aren't, when Tatum and Brown, who obviously are the core of their offense, aren't involved, he has the capability. He probably would be very streaky and hit and miss in this role, but in a bigger usage role can get it going for sure.
Yeah, whenever he plays the Raptors, I'm convinced every shot is falling. Like, he probably a little bit of like trauma from the from the playoff series in the bubble, but I think the biggest thing to me, and this is not, you asked me about the Celtics game, this isn't just the Celtics game, but like over this past week, the biggest thing to me that has stood out is that the Raptors are finding ways to win these games even without Fred kind of looking like pre-All-Star.
No, Fred he is not that. No.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, normally, if you would tell me Fred's not going to look like himself, he's not going to put up the numbers, not going to have the assists, like, I would be very worried about the Raptors. And I still am worried about the Raptors if I think about Fred not being Fred. But they've found ways to win. And a lot of that, of course, has been Pascal, who has just been incredible. Really the whole season, but especially this like stretch. And also their supporting cast. I feel like every night you have someone else who's kind of stepping up and playing well. And that's really important any time of the season, but especially right now. So
yeah, you don't want it to be too much of a guessing game, which I think was the problem earlier on in the year. Like sometimes you would guess and the answer was nobody. that was part of the problem. But like, you don't want to go searching. And I think what we've seen is, I was about to say Dwayne Casey, is Nick Nurse has found more or less the rotation he's going to roll with when these guys are healthy. You saw Armani Brooks, who has been that guy, or one of those guys in other games, fall out of the rotation in the return of Gary Trent Jr. against Boston. And, you know, to Nick Nurse's, you know, in his own words, Gary's still not quite himself, but he did make a few big plays. He got called for a whistle on what looked like a clean steal, or at least a call in which, you know, the physical initiation was not brought upon by Gary. But we don't have to go over every call.
He also ended up playing 37 minutes.
Yeah. Not great. Not great, Nick.
Before we continue, just like shout out to Armani. Good for him, man.
Yeah, he got the multi-year contract partial guarantee special that Yuta Watanabe got at the end of last year. And basically that, first of all, gets some more money into his account, which is awesome for him. Gives the Raptors some shooting injury insurance and just some extra shooting, you know, even if there aren't injuries, which is awesome for them because obviously they're short on it. And it allows him to, you know, presumably be at Summer League with the Raptors, fight for a roster spot in October. And, you know, after being waived by Houston, that's awesome. And you know, I was writing about Armani Brooks and I was like, I wonder how long his wingspan is. The Raptors hate 6'3 guys. And obviously it's a 6'9 wingspan. So,
of course. Also, it's just like, you got to love guys who, you know, have been kind of struggling to find their spot, or they, you know, are with a team and then get cut, or they're with a team and they're waived, or they're bouncing around from training camp to training camp. It's just really, really nice when a guy gets an opportunity mid-season, which is not an easy thing to do, to try to like show your worth in a really short amount of time.
And let's face it, being judged basically on one thing, like he has to do the other things. Like, those are important, but like if he doesn't hit the threes, like, they can find those things from elsewhere is kind of the point.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And after struggling, I think he hit one of his first nine in like his first five games. He made, I think, a pair each against Philadelphia and Chicago, and I don't have his numbers in front of me, but in the Cleveland and Indiana games remained, a reliable piece off the bench for sure.
And you also just saw him taking those shots. In those first couple of games, it looked like he passed up some of them. Like, he looked a little hesitant, which makes sense. Like, you're human. You don't want to mess up. But I think sometimes this is me really zooming out for a second. Sorry, I apologize.
No.
I think sometimes we do forget. We watch this game and it seems like there's so many players and teams and news to keep track of. There's like 400 jobs, 450 jobs, and no one wants to give those jobs up, you know? So when a guy can come in and you know, create a spot for himself and at least guarantee himself the opportunity to continue to compete for that spot, I just think that's awesome. And I think it should be celebrated more sometimes. Sometimes people like overlook 10-day contracts or like fringe guys. Well, but for sure. No.
But like Yuta Watanabe is one example. But like even the guy who he supplanted on the roster, O'Shea Brissett, like he got that type of contract. I think the number was like $300,000 guaranteed for that season, in which he was eventually waived so the Raptors could keep Watanabe. But if he hadn't got that extended look, is he on Indiana's radar where he's now, you know, on a sort of, you know, mailing it in team? But like throughout the year, he's been, you know, from my understanding of Pacers basketball, which, you know, isn't deep, but I do keep an eye on the Canadians. He's been a pretty big positive for them, and he can become that, you know, type of depth piece that hangs around a team just because he starts to mean something to the guys in that locker room. And, you know, beyond that, just beyond the vibes, he's producing. So, you know, I don't think the Raptors will forget this contribution from Brooks. And, you know, it comes with the opportunity costs of converting Justin Champagny, who went out and I think had 43 or 45 in the in the G League the day before the Brooks contract was actually announced. But I'm guessing the Raptors will find a way to get him back into training camp next year. As of now, he would be a restricted free agent. But yeah, good for Brooks. I'm sort of surprised this is where we went, not first, but very quickly. But
listen, are you really surprised that I just wanted a moment to like appreciate a guy creating an opportunity for himself?
No, I'm not.
back to the Raptors. Pascal,
40 points, very good. I did find it funny that they had 7 assists on 26 baskets in the first half. First of all, 26 baskets in the first half. Here we go. But like, so often, and especially in the Raptors discourse of the last 5 to 7 years, maybe longer than that, it's like, oh, they don't pass the ball. They don't move the ball. And the reality in this game is like, they were not sending help to Siakam, and he was just ISOing every Celtic and like scoring from 4 feet out. Like that's why there were no assists. It wasn't it wasn't like fault of the offense. He was just tearing Grant Williams apart. He was who am I missing here? A few different guys. He didn't get the Marcus Smart assignment, or Marcus Smart didn't get the Pascal Siakam assignment very much. But he got switched onto Daniel Theis, and those matches weren't very friendly for Theis.
He is awesome.
I, you know, especially in the wake of the Williams injury, he's just like, he can move. Like, he can move and he's tough. And
he's
like,
very tough.
And that's, you know, that doesn't replace Williams, but it gets you, you know, 60, 70% of the way there. And like the agility, like along with the toughness, which is essential, but like, he's not just like a clotting space eater. Like he can definitely not, no. Clotting. Yeah. I meant plotting, but you know what I mean. Like he can, like the Raptors couldn't guard like the Marcus Smart or Peyton Pritchard, Daniel Theis pick and roll a few times last night. And the Raptors are pretty long, and that just shows you how he can catch on the move and finish. It was weird to me when he went to Chicago and then went to Houston and didn't really, like, I can understand why it didn't happen in Houston, but then, like, why are you giving him a 4-year contract, Rockets? But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But he's a nice player, and especially, you know, in terms of having depth behind a guy like Robert Williams, like, Theis is a really good part for them.
Yeah, I think he's really good, and I think he's, like, super underrated. You know, you never really hear him really get praised, but then you watch them and you're like, wow, this guy is really good.
Well, I think like he goes to these other teams and just doesn't find a role, and you wonder why that is. And again, I'm not a Daniel Theis completist, so I can't say for certain, but like I know Raptors fans like have to respect the dude, like whether they hate him or not, because he's in a green jersey. Like I don't even find him to be one of the more questionably I don't know what the right, like, he's tough but not dirty in any way, I guess.
I was wondering what adjective
You know, Raptors, I'm sure fans, sure, I like, I'm guessing Marcus Smart is at the top of their hate list on the Celtics. Hate is a strong word, but sports hate. But Tice is just solid. Like, you got to respect what he does in there. But
big fan.
Was not solid against Pascal Siakam. But who could be? Right. So that certainly bolsters Siakam's All-NBA case. We went over that last week. The picture changes. The more the Lakers fart away games, the more, you know, the tougher it is. Like, I think LeBron's making one of the three teams, but, like, that's a train wreck. And, yeah. I don't really know what to say.
I love how many people at, like, more than one time this year have been rendered speechless.
Yeah.
When talking about the Lakers. Like, you're literally just...
Yeah. Yeah. The Athletic NBA show on their Saturday episode does this thing where they spin a wheel of fandom, and, like, then they'll get, like, a fan or writer of the team on. And this past week, it was Katie Heindel, because the wheel landed on the Raptors. And she was great. Go check that out at the Athletic NBA show. They did some Raptors trivia at the end, which was fun. But they spun the wheel the next time and they landed on the Lakers. And there was a pretty good reaction. anyway.
Even just trying to describe talking about them, I, like, lost my words. It's just, yeah.
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 So I think Siakam is a very real chance. I don't want to get too far into the All-NBA discussion, except to say that knowing that the points will count separately if a guy is voted at forward versus center, like, the points do not accumulate. Like, a guy's center points count as one section of votes, and a guy's, you know, points at forward count as another section of votes.
But anyway.
I know, but it, like, it really, in my mind, unless there's collusion between the people who have votes, like, it sort of pushes you to strongly lean toward a traditional positionality, because
you could end up,
you know, I feel strongly that Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, for that matter, are the three best players in the league, or have been the three most productive players in the league this year. I can reasonably put Antetokounmpo at forward, but knowing that Jokic and Embiid might have their votes split because some people are trying to get both of them on the first team and some people are like, this is, you know, they're both centers. Like, I just think you might as well, this is how I'm leaning today, but, like, right now I'm going to try the best I can to keep them to what their normal positions are. And where it gets tricky is, like, guard and forward. Like, they're just like DeRozan and Doncic are particularly tricky for me because they're clearly, like, ball handlers, like, who defend up the chart. So what do you do there? So, like, those are two where I might just slot in to get, like, the best players on and get, like, the
but
most
then
deserving guys
but
as
see,
high
the problem
as possible.
With this is that you're saying you would do that, you would slot them in to get the best players on the ballot. Someone else may be doing that with Jokic or Embiid, and that will split their vote, so it'll defeat the purpose.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
I don't like it.
I just think that, like, those guys are more plausibly both guards and forwards in what our real notion of positions are today versus...
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just
like, that's the way I'm justifying it to myself. I don't like it either. I wish there were more direction. I wish it was like, there's one position for everybody. This is the position. Vote on them. Or there
or
are no
the
positions.
Points. The points should just...
Or the accumulate. Points could amalgamate, yes.
Like, there's no reason why it shouldn't. If a guy's name is being put down on a space that you're saying he's allowed to be in, be it forward or center, those points should matter. Like, they should count.
Yeah. Anyway.
I feel
I
very
ultimately,
passionately about that,
yeah.
Actually.
My short take that we've made into a long conversation is I think that news, depending on how many people see it, should actually help Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to get into the mechanics of that. OG Anunoby is back. He came back in the Cleveland game, which was the first game since we last talked to you. And he played against them. He played in the Fire Interrupted game against Indiana.
Fire game.
And he played against the Celtics. What have you thought of old OG Holly?
Yeah, it's been really good just to have his presence back. Like, even more than anything he's particularly doing. Just, I was thinking about it during the Celtics game last night. It was in overtime, I think. Maybe it was at the end of the fourth quarter. Just seeing him in the corner there. Like, he missed a three in the corner, and then they went back to him. And I think he made the second one.
Yeah.
Even just having him there. Like, you missed having that option at not just the end of games, but throughout the game. You know, just having him there is a huge boost for the team. And you mentioned the fire game. This is unrelated and it's not funny, but it is a little bit funny that everything is okay.
I think we can laugh about it during now. it was ridiculous
during that game. My mom texted me, like, genuinely, like, you know, maybe a minute before everything, maybe 3 minutes before everything stopped, and was like, the Raptors are on fire, and sent me a bunch of, like, fire emojis, and then, like, a little gif of, like, you know, the gif of, like, the boy on the swing with the house behind him on fire. Do you know
that? Yes.
Or the meme, sorry. I don't know where she finds these things.
Isn't it a dog? It's a dog.
No, the little girl on the swing, and the, like, anyway, whatever. There was a fire. She sent me, so my mom now also sends gifts, like very involved gifts, via text. So she sent me the emojis and then the gifts, and then like 2 seconds, like 3 minutes later, the game actually was on fire, and she was like, "Oh no, like I didn't mean that. I didn't know." And I'm like, "I'm aware that you in Nova Scotia did not know that there was a fire in the building, Mom." And I just thought it was funny, her concern for her emoji use. But yeah, crazy game.
The inventor of the GIF died this past week.
I know, I did see that. That is sad.
I don't have his name in front of me, but condolences. It's hard to say that without sounding sarcastic, but, you know, somebody died. It's sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
OG's shooting 9 for 18 since he came back. Okay. From three, I should say.
Yeah.
Which is very important to this team. If he's doing nothing else, and he is doing many other things. He's had a few, he's had 3 steals in 3 games. He's had 7 assists in 3 games, which is nice. He's just another guy to throw the ball to when the offense stalls out, or just another chance to get some more playmakers / get Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam some time on the bench. In
just
theory,
seeing him in that corner spot upon the arc, I was like, yeah, this, I missed this. Like, I'm sure the Raptors also missed this spacing too. Great to see him back.
I think Fred VanVleet said it best, and I'll paraphrase. It's like, you know, he's out for so long that you get used to him being out, and you're like, this is what we do. This is how we do things. And then he comes back. It's like, oh yeah, OG Anunoby is a very good NBA player and a huge part of what we do. Like,
oh yeah, this is how we do things.
Yeah, that this is like, this is how it's meant to look. And, like, everybody knows that injuries are part of the season. But, like, you know, it's not two super talented log guys across the board. It's three. Like, that's the dream. Sometimes it's five. But speaking of that,
Thad has looked really, really good his past few games with the Raptors. I feel like last night was probably the best full performance.
That's what Nick Nurse
said.
Yeah.
And I think that some of that is just him getting more comfortable with his teammates, getting to know them a little bit better, how they play, where they play, where they want the ball, et cetera, et cetera. And also knowing the offense. And I thought it was really funny. I saw the clip, or not the clip, I saw the quote. You can correct me if I'm missing anything. But someone asked him, there was a question like, you know, what is it about the Raptors, or like, what's different about them? And he's like, everybody's 6'9".
Yeah,
was that last night?
After I was done with another interview, I creeped back in, and that was one of the first things he said. Yeah.
I love how much Thad loves this feature of the Raptors. He was on the Raptor show with Willu last week. Last week. Today is the beginning of this week. Today is Tuesday. He was on the show last week with Willu, and the amount of times he mentioned and the amount of ways he mentioned, everybody's 6'9". Like, I looked around at Fred and was like, where's our point guard? And Fred said, we don't do that here, which was a really funny moment from his first game. Like, who's the point guard? They don't do that here. Fred wasn't in the game at that point. But I love his, like, He almost seems to be tickled by the fact that this roster is built this way. And to see a veteran who has this many years kind of feel the same way that we feel when we're looking at the roster, as it kind of became the Raptors' go-to. Like, their trademark is they love long wing players.
Yeah. Well, just like imagine you're Thad Young, you're picked 12th in 2007, and your whole life you're like, oh, is he a small forward or is he a power forward? Not your whole life, but probably for the first 10 years of your career. It's like, oh, this guy doesn't really fit. Like, where do we put him? He's not quite quick enough to guard, like, the best small forwards, but he's not quite big enough to battle inside. And then it's like, you wind up on a team, and that's not to say he hasn't, like, obviously he's had a very good career. You don't stick around for 15 years by accident. I got momentarily confused about whether I say by accident or on accident. A lot of Americans say on accident. Anyway.
You keep looking up. Are you watching? Are the Jays playing?
No. You don't need to tell the people this, Holly. there is a baseball game on, and okay. I'm not at all interested in it. I don't know why. It's probably because it's on. That's why. But you wind up on this team in which that undefinability, which I don't think is a word, is, you know, a feature, not a bug.
A thing that made me think of is, I don't know if you're watching Winning Time on HBO.
I'm not yet, no.
Okay, I watched the first episode, I liked it, watched the second episode, and it lost me, and it just feels like it's not the right time for me, so that is not, oh no, he just turned off the TV, sorry for calling you out.
It's okay, and it's probably better for this podcast quality.
Okay, well... So anyway, this isn't a huge, the show is good or not good or any of those
things. Yeah, not a big take, yeah.
But in the first episode, when they're talking about drafting Magic, it's so funny because the conversation around him is, you can't have this guy being a point guard. He's too big. Like, how? Imagine having someone his size playing the point guard. This is ridiculous. I don't want this. This is foolish. We'll look silly. And you hear people say that, and then you think about the game today, and it's like, that's the stupidest argument ever. Like, that you thought that size at point guard would be a problem.
Yeah. Like, the only way that holds, and I do think the Raptors do miss this sometimes, is it's just like, more difficult, unless you're LeBron or Giannis, to get through traffic in the paint.
It's
harder to weave your way through it. Like,
but Pascal, I just mean looking at a player like Magic. Kicks.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But there is an element of, like, it's helpful to be able to go under and through sometimes rather than just, like, over, for the lack of a better word. Because, like, even the way Pascal and Scotty, you know, get into the defense and sometimes kick it out, there's a lot of, like, you know, forward, then you're backing up. And
maneuvering, you know, because there's just moves. More yeah, it's not body the traditional and
drive
space.
And
yeah.
kick. And as, you know, to bring it back to the Raptors, as Fred has been compromised in certain ways, they're taking pains to not have him, you know, Precious Achiuwa and Chris Boucher are sometimes bringing the ball up the floor so Fred VanVleet doesn't have to. You can see why that skill in a shorter player is valuable. To now, the Raptors know what they're doing. Back to Thad Young, in the last three games, all wins. He is a plus 33 in 58 minutes. He had 12, 8, and 3, and 3 blocks against the Celtics. And what I think they've stumbled upon here is that, and Blake Murphy pointed this out as well, it's nice to see that guy coming up on Twitter. he makes so much sense with more polished players. And that's not to say anything bad about Chris Boucher or Precious Achiuwa, who are certainly filling that sort of chaos energy, and even more than that sometimes, role. But, like, he, as Blake said, you know, I call him a connector, kind of. Blake calls him an amplifier, and he helps bring pieces together with his, you know, playmaking, with his quick vision, with his sort of ability to get into the right spots. And that's just more valuable with guys who are more precise with what they're doing on the floor than Siakam, or sorry, rather than Achiuwa mm-hmm. and Boucher, who like are doing a lot of what they're doing through energy and hustle and just grinding, kind of. So they're generally not bringing them in until like the start of the second quarter, the start of the fourth quarter, not at that same wave that Boucher and Achiuwa are coming in. And then that allows him to play with the starters, maybe if Gary Trent's off, or maybe if they need to give Scottie Barnes a second break, maybe if OG's not able to, you know, if he needs another break because he's still getting his feet under him. And I mm-hmm. think he just looks so good as that de facto fifth starter, even though like his minutes aren't, you know, until the Boston game, he played 28 minutes. His minutes don't say that. But I really think they found something in that sort of mm-hmm. lineup.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I also, like, I know I mentioned it already, but also just seeing him get more comfortable. And like you said, you don't stay in the league for as long as he has unless he's very good at a number of things. So as he's gotten some time with these teammates, he's also finding what works, like the ways that he can help this team and be successful with this team. And I just love hearing him talk about his teammates. I mean, you know that that is a good guy because he's like super good friends with CJ Miles, who is, you know, hands down greatest. Why are you laughing?
I don't know. That's true. Oh. I just didn't.
I thought you had something to add, like a story, and I was hoping.
No, it's just it's a very, you know, it's a very you statement, but like
well, that, I was hoping you're not like wrong. A CJ story or something to add.
No, CJ is great.
CJ is great, and if he vouches for someone, then I'm in. I like 100%. And it's you see it already. I feel like every interview I've seen with Thad, and then also the post games, he's always finding ways to rave about these teammates that he's only been with for a couple of weeks, month. I don't know how long it's been. Probably a month, right?
The trade deadline was. It's coming up on 2 months now.
Gosh, okay. Well, 2 months.
6 weeks, 7 weeks.
6 weeks, like 7 weeks. It feels like it's been a month, a couple weeks. Time doesn't matter. But he just loves to rave about these guys. Like you can just tell that he would be an incredible guy in the locker room. And I think that as the games go on, he's finding ways to make a difference and make an impact. And it's great. Those first couple games, like he looked pretty hesitant. And I remember thinking like, Thad, like, do what you do. You know what I mean? Like there were a couple times where he'd pass up shots and things like that. And I was kind of wondering like, this doesn't look like him. And then you give him a couple games and it's like, oh, okay. That was a normal human reaction to being in a new situation. He was just kind of like sussing out the facts, the situation. And yeah, now he looks good. And like they picked up a really important piece that is helping them and will continue to help them. I think even more as we get into higher stakes situations.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised to continue to see, especially as, you know, they presumably find some rest for a few of mm-hmm. the guys who are banged up, which is, you know, probably all of them. But we certainly know that Van Vliet, Kemba, Chumist, Monday's game, OG Anunoby, I don't expect him to sit out necessarily. But again, there's a conditioning issue. Even Thad himself looked like he went down with something late in the game. Yeah. He's not on the injury report or the latest injury report that I've seen, but so that's good news.
I don't know if you saw the replay. I can't remember which Celtics player it was, but the Celtics player came flying in, like I think to get like a rebound, to get an offensive rebound, and his like leg caught like shoved Thad's to the side. Like it just looked like his whole knee slash leg slash ankle slash everything on one leg went in. It looked very painful. Yeah. when he went down.
Which Celtic was most annoying last night other than Marcus Smart? I'll take mm-hmm. Sam Hauser. Like every time Sam Hauser hit a three, it's like, oh my God, this guy.
I think it just has to be Marcus for me because he missed a three really late in the game.
Yeah, it was dead on. There was at least one dead on one that just hit front rim. But like yeah, my view, like those shots look like they're going in easily.
I like stopped breathing in that moment because I was like I was getting ready to groan, to exhale a groan because I was like, of course, but it didn't go in and it felt like, okay, they're gonna escape. But I think I have to say Marcus because He terrifies me.
Yeah. Quickly, before we move on to some reader questions, we talked about Fred's injury situation last week. We'll probably talk about it next week. No back-to-backs this week. Would you rest him in any of the games?
Doc Mac. Yeah, I'm going to pull out my medical degree from my back pocket. I would not rest him. I would try to keep his minutes down, but I mean, I know you'd be tempted to say rest him against Orlando, but hey, we've seen the Raptors against Orlando and that hasn't gone well. You? I mean, sure, if he isn't feeling well and if...
Yeah, with the thing about that question, I know, it's he's not really gonna fair. Tell you. We don't have all the information. We don't even have most of the information. And we don't know how much difference a game off or two games off will make. Like I said last week, we've already seen him get five games off and it didn't solve things. So,
I think my thing would be just try to limit his minutes as best as you can, which, you know.
Yeah. Like, I'm guessing they will rest him in one of the back-to-back games in the following week, which I believe is Philly-Atlanta. But until then, you're probably rolling with him, and it's on Nick and the coaching staff to, you know, maybe you make it shorter spurts. I don't know.
Maybe you just build a big lead and not have a fire and not need an hour and...
Well, the fire helped.
Wake. I know he got to not play in the second half. But I mean, maybe they go up by 30 and they can just rest him and the game just ends, you know?
For sure.
That must have been one of the craziest games you've covered, no?
I was on TSN radio and the host asked me, like, it must have been scary. And like, honestly, I wouldn't say it was scary. Mm-hmm. But... it was certainly weird, but like in terms of like scary sporting moments that I've covered, I would put game five, Jays Rangers that ended in, or didn't end, but you know, the crazy seventh inning game with the Batista homer. Like when Texas scored on the controversial, the catcher throwing it back to the pitcher and hitting the bat. And the umps reviewed it and ruled it a run. And then, like, people were throwing beer cans
down.
That
was awful.
And, like, that was actually scary because I had joked earlier in the day to Melissa Cudo of CP. I was like, well, hopefully we don't have to cover a riot. And, like, at that moment, I was like, this could be a riot. Off the top of my head, that's the scariest thing I've covered. This wasn't scary. Like, there was some popcorn thrown on us, which is better than the champagne that was sprayed on my computer after the Raptors beat the Bucks to advance to the NBA Finals. But after like some brief booing, like everything cleared out relatively safely and orderly. There was no like stampede or anything going on. The fire didn't...
It was in hand.
The fire wasn't spreading. I couldn't even see the flames. Like, I saw the video, but, like, I'm on the other side of the court, so I couldn't see that side of the speaker. So it was certainly a strange... definitely made less strange by the fact that we've seen an empty stadium game recently. And certainly within the last few months. So, you know, very weird, but...
That's an interesting question, though. Like, the most scared you've been in... Or, like, the most... strange situation. This isn't a scary situation really, but I think the weirdest I've ever felt at an NBA game was when Kevin Durant got injured in the finals. Yeah. Like that just made your stomach drop. I was very emotional like watching that. It was just horrific to watch that. And then the post game, like hearing the Warriors, you know, front office staff, like talking and crying as they were addressing the media. That was really just like an awful, awful, awful feeling that sticks out to me as I remember leaving the arena being like, this isn't fun. I hate this. Like, this is awful. Like, I just felt empty for like, why was he playing? Should he have played? The reaction to the fan, like all of it was just left an awful taste in my mouth. I hated it. But anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It was not great. But this discussion is a good segue to one of our questions here from our pal, Anea, who thank you for providing the pronunciation of your name. Hopefully I didn't screw it up. What is the most stressful / confusing situation you've ever been in that would have been improved by Herbie calmly narrating the steps you needed to take and shushing your negative thoughts?
Okay, I don't know what Anea does in her like day job, but she should legit be a writer because her questions are always like,
yeah. Like if you guys are mad that I keep on picking her questions, ask better questions.
She's like a book prompt person. Like, here's the plot. Go. Yeah. Do you have
her Twitter bio says communicator or something. And she also, it says roller derby when not in the middle of a pandemic. So,
okay, that's pretty awesome. She's definitely a communicator. That's an awesome question. Yeah. I don't know if I have anything immediately flooding my mind. You?
Well, my first panic attack would have been helpful. I don't know if I would have chose Herbie, like his specific voice. I have, you know, Herbie does a great job. As somebody who's heard him do that job like 700 times in my life or whatever, like I have complicated feelings about him that I hope people can understand. But like, yes, a voice inside my head explaining what was going on while I like my heart raced and I leaned against the wall for like support because I was dizzy and I didn't know why, like for somebody to explain that and to get the negative thoughts out of my head, that would have been great. Yeah, like panic attack. That's the first thing that comes to my mind for sure.
I actually think mine would be a really, really bad flight home. The Raptors played the Jazz. It was an early game in January. I arrived at the arena a couple minutes into the third quarter. I was supposed to arrive hours before the game, flying back from Nova Scotia. There was a really bad storm, and we couldn't land, which I had never experienced before. Like, I was flying into the island airport, and we kept, like, coming down, and then we would have to, like, come back up into the air and, like, do this crazy turn, and the wind was, like, it was like over, you know, like 120 kilometers or something. Like, it was crazy. And I was terrified. I'm not a great flyer anyway when it comes to turbulence. Those really tiny planes, not awesome. The guy sitting beside me, he was an angel. Like, at one point I remember, like, my arm wasn't touching the rail, like the armrest beside me. It was fully wrapped around his arm as I, like, clutched his hand, like, extremely hard. I did not know this man. I did not ask him if I could hold his hand. But he used to work in, I don't know, like Edmonton or somewhere, and they used to have to fly up north. And he was calmly explaining to me that, like, we were not at a risk, like it was okay, like explaining why we couldn't land and what all had to happen next. And he was so soothing and told me, like, some, you know, he had flown in worse conditions, and just me clutching his hand and him calmly telling me it was going to be okay. That's my personal version of Herbie doing this shish.
It's very, very funny you mentioned that story. I'm currently reading A Swim in a Pond in the Rain by the great writer George Saunders, and it's him breaking down some Russian short stories and explaining why they work. But he, in talking about the story, he talks about his own personal experience on like a flight that sounds like several degrees worse than yours, to the extent that he thought like this was it. And he was talking about what thoughts were going through his head and they were sort of selfish, blah, blah, blah. But like there was a 14-year-old sitting next to him who, like, I don't know if he'd been on a plane before, but probably not much experience. And the kid asked him, is this supposed to be happening? And he answered, yes. Like, don't worry.
Heart.
Yeah, I know. Which is like the next level of the story you just told, I thought.
You can think all the selfish thoughts you want. You were there for that kid.
Yeah. Oh, man. What you do is more like... I do think motive, we're getting real philosophical now. I think motive matters, but your actions matter a lot more than your words or even your intent sometimes. Not sometimes. I think your actions are just certainly the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fact check, Scott Kelly, are Detroit, Portland, and Dallas the only NBA teams the Raptors have not beaten this year? I just went through the NBA standings, and I believe the answer is yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird group.
Detroit, Portland, and Dallas?
Yeah.
I would have known Detroit and Dallas, but I did not realize the Portland thing. That's crazy.
Ryan P. Fat Gumby asks, no relation to Mike Ganter, I assume, has a picture of Boris Diaw with drinking wine, the Boris Diaw wine picture as his...
Great photo.
More nebulous than a question, but a hot topic right now is officiating. As a fan, I know my perspective is heavily skewed, and last night's broadcast fueled that fire. The league can't be happy, he says in brackets, the league can't be happy about the focus being that much on non-gameplay. How real is the perceived bias?
I don't think it's real. I think that
The perceived bias is real. The actual bias is not real.
Problems with officiating, real. Room for improvement, definitely real. But I don't think there actually is a bias. I think it's more just, it's really hard to be an official. Basketball is probably the most difficult game to officiate because there's so much happening at such a high speed. The game's evolving and changing, you know, season by season, and you're bringing in new officials, which is important and needs to continue to happen. But with that, you're gonna also sometimes have bumps along the way. And I think it's more just, I think when you think about a bias that isn't real, the perceived bias, it's a lot of different things coming together to make that seem valid. It could be a new official. It could be a team that hadn't worked together, a crew that hadn't worked together. Like, there's a lot of different, like, elements there, but I don't actually think there is.
Yeah, I do think there's some, like, maybe there is an element of, like, the refs know subconsciously, well, they know consciously Boston is a good defensive team. Mm-hmm. So subconsciously, maybe they're like, that's legal. But, like...
As long as we have officials that are human beings and not robots, there's gonna be
Something like that, if not that, is going to happen. And the Raptors, unfortunately, but probably rightly for them, have a reputation as a team that fouls a lot.
A team that complains a lot. They sometimes get caught up with complaining.
Yeah, they're not like the Blake Griffin, Chris Paul Clippers, but Nick Nurse is certainly, you know how Brad Stevens had that quote, like, I lost it one time on the sidelines and I was like, I'm never going to do that again because I want my players to take... what I'm projecting. Nick Nurse does not subscribe to that theory. I always bring this quote up when talking about refs. It's Hanlon's razor, and I don't mean it as negatively as it's going to sound about the officials. Never ascribe to malice that which is adequately explained by incompetence. That's not to say the referees are incompetent, but they are simply, as you put, unable to keep up with a game that is as intricate and quick-paced as NBA basketball. Last question, and I think it's different than the question we answered last week in terms of which team, and I wrote about at The Athletic, which team the Raptors would be best off facing in terms of who they would most like to see in terms of advancing. AZ asks, for the purposes of development, which of the top four teams in the East would the Raps most benefit from facing?
Development? Probably the Celtics. Learning to get over that defensive juggernaut while also containing its stars when they're playing.
Yeah, I'd probably...
Is what my answer would be. What would your answer
be? I'd probably say the Celtics or the Bucks.
Well, the Bucks just because, yeah, you're learning from champions.
Yeah, and you're like...
defeating the champions, kind of.
Yeah, and watching how Giannis defends...
That is an interesting question, though. ...in a series
is very useful for a guy like Scottie, who I think projects to be more of a back-end defender than like a... as I've said many times, than like a guard on the ball guy. Not that he can't do both. The Heat would be a great series mentally, I think.
Yeah.
but I think like the Heat are almost so similar to
Maybe the Raptors would get under the Heat skin. Seems like that's a possibility these days.
Yeah, I just think there's maybe not enough contrast there for the learning. And like, obviously, like one team is pretty damn veteran and the other team is young, but like
Eric, I was making a joke about the Miami Heat.
Yeah, I know they're falling apart emotionally. Can't believe
I just wanted to have a moment.
Believe Jimmy Butler is wearing out his welcome. It's shocking.
You robbed me of that moment.
Yeah,
that's a great question though, like the developmental side. Yeah, I would say the Celtics, just because you have to be very disciplined to overcome their defense when everybody's playing.
Yeah,
they're really good. I know that I spend a lot of time saying how much I hate them, but I don't hate them.
It's respect. It's respect out of hate.
Yes, I mean, or it's hate out of respect. The Raptors. It stresses me out. Unlike, there's no other team that stresses me out like that. There's teams that I worry the Raptors will lose against, or teams that I don't feel confident against. But I don't know. Watching the Celtics just makes me angry, and I'm not normally an angry basketball viewer. So
quickly, Holly. Wolves Wednesday, Orlando, yikes, Friday, Miami, and the Kyle Lowry return on Sunday. We will not talk about the Kyle Lowry return now. Let's save it for, I think we will be recording two on and Monday, one. The day after. Yeah, okay, 2-1. Who is the loss coming against?
I don't know.
Great, very helpful.
The Wolves.
That's who I'm good. That's what I was going to predict too.
Really?
Yeah, loss, win-win.
Okay, well then let's see. Let's see how wrong we are.
Yeah, probably pretty wrong.
Do you think the Raptors will be in sixth by the time we do this podcast?
Just quickly looking at the schedule.
It's at the bottom of our run.
Yeah. I know. Thank you. I'll say yes, they will continue to be in sixth, but I did not put a whole lot of thought into that. We will come to you next Monday after the Kyle Lowry return. Let's hope nothing gets in the way of that. Let's hope the Raptors stay relatively healthy. Let's just hope we all stay relatively healthy, Holly. as always, Holly, anything you want to plug out the door?
No, we're good.
Okay. Holly McKenzie. She's great. You can see her on Twitter at StackMan.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not, but too bad.
No, Holly, I wasn't.
Yeah. Holly, thanks so much. And guys, everybody, keep enjoying meaningful basketball. It's a fun time of year.
Stay safe. Stay healthy.
See ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.